Tonight's message is Moab, resting on your leaves. But leaves is the settlement of the dregs that's left after winemaking. I don't know if anybody ever made muscadine wine or any different type of wine or whatever. But as you're making wine, there's a settlement that settles at the bottom of it, the dregs of it. And you see a lot of this when we're talking about drinking of the cup of the Lord, drinking of the cup, that you have to, he said that you have to end up drinking all of the dregs that are in the Psalms, the 75th Psalms. If we read in the 75th Psalms, I think it is. But if you look at verse 8 in Psalm 75, he says, "For the hand of the Lord, for in the hand of the Lord there's a cup, and the wine is red, it is full of mixture, and he poured out of the same. But the dregs thereof, all the wicked of the earth shall wring them out and drink them. But I will declare forever, I will sing praises to Jacob." That cup that he's talking about drinking of, that cup that we so mentioned at the Lord's Supper, drinking of the cup. We have to drink of the cup. Now, we can drink of the cup of the Lord or the devil's cup, but you have to drink the cup, and the cup is a sign of your tribulation, your trials, and things that you're going through. And you remember that the disciples asked Jesus about sitting on his right hand or his left hand. And he said that, "Are you able to drink the cup that I'm about to drink?" And they say that they could. And he says, "Well, you will drink of that cup, but it's not mine to give you to sit at my right hand or my left hand." Because in that cup of the Lord, there's your just punishment. That there's what the Lord has coming to you. The cup is trial and tribulation. The cup can be a various numbers of things to take you out of this life. If we look in the book of Jeremiah, the 48th chapter and 11th verse, it says, "Moab had been at ease from his youth, and he had settled on his lees, and had not been emptied from vessel to vessel, neither had he gone into captivity. Therefore his taste remained in him, and his scent is not changed." The very thing that gives him flavor, that would give us flavor, the trials and the tribulations, the things of life, the lees is something that strengthens a mixture now. It adds the body to a mixture. It adds the taste to a mixture. But if it's not shaken, you have some different things. I don't know if you made tea or something, and some of the sediment goes to the bottom, and you have to shake it up and get it back in solution or suspension or whatever. It gives an equal taste to it. There, if you take pineapple juice, when you first buy pineapple juice, if you don't shake the pineapple juice up, there's a thin film of just watery-like liquid on the top, and it tastes bad because the leaves, the stuff that's in there had settled down to the bottom, and you have to shake it real good. There are a whole lot of things that you buy that liquid solutions, and on the label they tell you, shake before opening. Shake it up real good before you open it. That's to put it in the mixture. The roughness of the shaking, the vigor of shaking, and just like a can of paint that you have to stir up or shake it. They put it in, if you go to Home Depot or something, you see they shake it. They got a machine that shakes it. Shaking in our lives in trouble and tribulation and trials and afflictions and hardships and things that God sends into our lives, it strengthens our faith. It brings us to the point of you go from faith to faith. And that's how you develop faith in God. But see, he's talking to Moab here, and they were wicked people. These were people that he was going to destroy. Luxury and ease had gotten to them, just like it is in this nation here. And I'm going to talk about that next week, because on our behalf, it's not resting on our leaves, because these people didn't know God. This was Moab and the Ammonites. And you remember, they were the children of Lot's incestuous relationship with his daughter. But God was going to save some of the Moabites, because there's a Moabite in David's ancestral line. You remember Ruth, she was a hard-working Moabite, in that she decided to switch God. She told her mother-in-law Naomi that her gods would be her God, and she was going to leave their gods. And there were another roommate, another sister-in-law, Orpah, I think was her name, that went back, and a lot of people don't even know her name now, because she went back to her people. So there are Moabites that continue on, but we have to see that as a nation, God wiped out the Moabites. The Moabites was wiped out as a nation. They saved Babylon and virtually destroyed them, but the remnants of those that Babylon didn't destroy, they were scattered. The Arab people destroyed them. But the Moabites was near kinsmen of the Israelites. They were near kinsmen, and when they were going to the promised land, God told them, they says, now, you can't have any of the Moabites' land. It's in Deuteronomy. I'll give you that passage when I come Saturday. That you're not going to have any of the Moabites' land because they're your near kindred. You can pass through there, but you can't have their land. And so when Balak hired Balaam to fight against Moab, I mean, when Balak from the Moabites hired Balaam to curse the children of Israel because he was afraid that they were going to take over. And it's like a lot of us today. We're afraid of something that God had already set up for us and protecting us. If he'd have been a follower of God, if Balaam actually would have been a follower of God, and he tried to curse him, but he couldn't curse him, they'd have realized that their efforts was for nothing. A lot of our worry a lot of time is for nothing. But we have our kinsmen now. During times of death or distress and things happen, they move in on inheritance or think somebody's going to take something from them or not. And we have kinsmen killing kinsmen, kinsmen taking things from them. So your cousins and relatives and things fighting one another. And God didn't want that. That was the example of that when he was talking about the Moab and the Moabites not doing this. So they lived in relative ease most of their lives. At one time, David made them be subject. He put them in the subjection. They was in the subjection to Israel several different times. We read about it under Ahab's reign and under Jehoram's reign, where the king of Mesha delivered up 100,000 rams a year, and they were sheep herders. He was a sheep master. Delivered up that many a year in tribute money to Israel. So they had been subject, but they never had went into exile. They were like a lot of people today, that they lived comfortably. They didn't have too much things against them, not that they didn't have bad come in their lives, but they still didn't have a knowledge of God, even seek a knowledge of God. And we have to seek God, and there's illustrations that the Moabites knew of God, but they didn't attempt to know God. It's a lot of people that don't make attempts to know God. And he says that they had been resting on their leaves. Therefore, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will send unto him wanderers, and they shall cause him to wander, and shall empty his vessels and break their bottles. And Moab shall be ashamed of Chemosh, as the house of Israel was ashamed of Bethel, their confidence. Chemosh was their god, and they was going to see that that God was going to let them down, that they wasn't serving the true and the living God, and they were going to be ashamed of the God they own. It's just like a lot of people that follow Jesus today, a lot of Christians, will be ashamed of that name and not even want you to call that name, because they syncretized God in those days. When he say as Israel, the house of Israel was ashamed of Bethel, their confidence, because God came in and destroyed Bethel. Bethel was just like Christianity to the day. It's mixed in with idolatry, with Moabite worship. It's mixed in with syncretism. It has syncretized it. It has Easter. We got many of Christians be with their wives or husbands in their churches worshiping on Easter, you know, following Easter, following Christmas, and all these things. That's because they allowed their Moabite spouses to pull them away from God, just like they were pulled away from God. They had, Bethel was there, but you remember, that was one of the places of golden calf worship, where they was worshiping God under the guise of the golden calf. So just because you call your God Jesus, that doesn't mean he's Jesus. That's another Jesus. That's what we have in this nation, is another Jesus. That's why I don't interact. I tell you, I was trying to get away the other day at the funeral or whatever, because those are other Jesuses we're talking about. All Christianity is not the same. All Protestant churches are not the same. They're unpure churches, just like this religion here in the Moabites. It says Moab is spoil. How say ye, we are mighty and strong men for the war? Moab is spoiled and gone up out of her cities, and her chosen young men are gone down to the slaughter, says the king, whose name is the Lord of hosts. The calamity of Moab is near to come, and its affliction has hasted. All ye that are about him, bemoan him, and all ye that know his name, say, how is it the strong staff broken and the beautiful rod? This daughter that doeth inhabited Dibon, come down from the glory and sit in the thirst, for the spoil of Moab shall come upon thee, and he shall destroy thine strongholds. A lot of people today has prospered in Christianity, and their different gospels of money coming, and their different gospels of prosperity, and a lot of the men and women have went along with these things. And now God's shaking, and that's why I say we really need a strong prayer out, because what's coming up against you is God. It's not Satan, it's God doing that. Now if Satan has a hand in doing it, it's because God sent him there to prove you. It's a lot of us that's going to lose our lives during this time. It's a lot of us going to lose our finances, our homes, all the things that we own. Because God's going to send in the vine dressers to shake Moab and empty it from vessel to vessel. And that's going to happen in Christianity. And they showed it happen in God brought judgment on the house of Judah first. Now he's showing you what he's going to do to those that are outside the covenant of God. And Moab and Moabites is just kind of a metaphor for people today that they don't get along with their kindred. These people are cousins or relatives, and those are your enemies. Those are the ones that you've intermarried with. Those are the ones that you may be living right in your home or whatever. It doesn't, that's why I say it's not a geographical Moabite. Anybody could be a Moabite, any nationality or whatever. It's the mentality, it's the thought life, it's what that person is at heart, because God has to encase these spirits in flesh. Spirits are encased in flesh. That's why the devil wants to possess you. That's why spirits try to inhabit your body. That's why when the spirits was cast out of the man with the demons, the demoniac, that they said, well, let us go into the swine. Because spirits has to be housed in a body, in a corporeal body, and they will inhabit your body. Sin is in the flesh. It gets in the flesh. So your enemies, he said, could be those of your own household. So what if your wife is not a true follower of God? What if your husband or your children are not following the true God, but are Moabites at heart? They hadn't had a heart conversion. What happens to them also happens to you. The lifestyle that they live in, because anyone that helpeth these people, God said they shall be destroyed. So because our issue as a Christian would be complacency, as I said, we'll talk next week. But their issue as Moabites would be that they've had it easy. They've had a spouse, relatives or something that had money, that had finances, that had anointing upon their life, that God had blessed them. But just because God bless your spouse or your parents or your children, that doesn't mean he blesses you. You need to get to know God. You just inheriting or using their blessings and getting by. So a lot of people go out and marry a rich husband or a rich wife. So a lot of children, parents right now, that's why the churches are empty on Saturday mornings and Sundays. Because those parents, instead of Bible study, instead of prayer service thing, they have those kids at the break game. They have them in Little League. They have them studying to be a doctor or lawyer because they want to ride that child. That child becomes something that they ain't. They wasn't, or they wanted to be in their life. They're trying to live their lives to fulfill their lives through their children so that child could sign a multi-million dollar contract in the NFL, the NBA, or with basketball, football, baseball, any of these sports. They want that child to be a doctor, a lawyer, so that child can give it money so that they can live a life of ease and luxury. And that's one of the reasons he destroyed Judah and Israel. Because of those life of luxuries, and all things has to come to an end. And God was telling Moab that this was going to come about because of their transgressions against God. And you want to know, a lot of people say, well, if we didn't know of God, and people that don't want to read the gospel and don't follow God, they say, well, how can God judge us when we didn't follow God or whatever? You will be beaten with many stripes. It's not as many as the person who knew God. But we see that you should have known God. God had been revealed to you. That spouse, that was his job to tell you about God. You mean to tell me you go to church every day? You go to church all the time. You in a position in the church. You hadn't told your spouse, whether it be your wife or your husband, that Saturday is the Sabbath? You hadn't told that spouse that that's wrong celebrating Easter. That's wrong celebrating Christmas. Well, that spouse have led you. I'll talk about that spouse next week when I say complacency in killing his own household. Because if you don't stand for God, if you allow your daughters and your children, sons and daughters to not live for God and they and your household, they have association with you, you're complacent. God's going to get you for that. That's why a lot of Christians are having problems today. And he'll kill you for that. He'll kill your children for that. But we don't want to hear about that God. We want to hear about Jesus, but Jesus said, no new commandment I've given unto you. You should be in the spirit. You should learn about this God that will kill you. Ask Eli. He raised up Samuel and said, Eli, I'm going to shut down your house. I'm going to end the priesthood. I'm going to kill your sons because you hadn't taught your sons to obey you. Your sons not listening at you. They're sleeping with the women in the church. They're taking the fatted offering before the people have a chance to enjoy it and before they offer it upright. See, the people were something like Sister Harris, you know, when she put in, she said, well, look, y'all go pray over that. And I said, well, Sister Harris, I'm going to pray over it if you give it to me. Not that's a magical portion in that, but they're dedicating it to the Lord. And those people were dedicating their sacrifices to the Lord. And his sons was wanting and spending it so fast. And they said, well, no, we don't want our portion boiled. We want it raw. Give it to us just like this. They didn't have respect for the things of God. Your children will disrespect your home if you let them in that. If they're grown and responsible, if they're not grown and responsible, they should be under your rule and authority. That's what Joshua said. As for me and my house, we will follow the Lord. Me and my wife had a thing about that when we first came to the church. And I was telling her she was going to this church. And I came out of that church. I was in that church, but I said, well, no, they ain't right or whatever. And I said, it's going to be a problem between me and you if you enter some other religion or some other church. Any home where the spouses are attending two different churches, that's not good in that home. That's a problem in that home because somebody, because of doctrine, are not following together. That's not unity. And so he said he was going to destroy them because they had a life of ease. They hadn't had trouble like today. And we see where a lot of entitlement programs, a lot of people kill you over Medicare, welfare, food stamps, and all these other because they feel they're entitled to that. A lot of people hadn't had a job a day in their life, and things happen with the government, or things happen to challenge that income, and they're upset, and they're talking and slandering and everything. But see, if your confidence was in God and not those individuals, this wouldn't bother you. You would just see it as a bump in the road. He has to purge those people within that system. Those people have to be purged out because it's no free lunches. There are no free lunches. Everybody has to work in some type of work. And that's what I say. When you have these empowerment programs, and I'm not saying not helping. That's what a lot of them are not explaining about some of the people that get food stamps and things. Now, these are working people that are out of jobs, or military people that incomes are being supplemented. But see, you do have those within the system that's out at the seafood place buying and throwing away money and not spending frugally and not doing anything for the government, and they just getting the money in and just spending it any kind of way and not helping God. They're not thankful for what God are doing it, and it shows in their life. They don't attend churches. They don't attend the things of God. And when people are saying about the poor of the people, God said, now if you show partiality to the poor, I'm going to get you because that's not fair judgment. See, it's some poor that's doing things that's wicked and evil also. We have a mentality and we have to tell people this. Well, you have to cry down on all these unwed mothers because you will be a welfare casualty the rest of your life. It's permanent welfare casualty women right now that won't have a job and they'll have children by four or five different men. Because the government has found out that we have to go and get these men that's not supporting their children. You can't even make your daughters marry a man or be with a man that's going to take care of his own children. That's a problem. And see, that's a problem outside the church as well as in the church. God judges the church and we preach that in the church, but we have to also preach it to those that are without. They know about it. Well, I'm glad I don't go to your church. I'm glad you don't either, but you know where I stand and you know where my God stands. Now, it's not that I don't love you. I love you, and I love my relatives. Me and my brother was talking today. It's not that you don't love your relative, but if it's your grandma, she wrong. If it's your sister, she wrong. If it's your daughter, she wrong. If it's your husband, she wrong. And when God's judging Moab, if we get in the place of that judgment, we will have a problem because He's going to send those in. We look at a few political figures today and at this time that are coming in, and what they're saying is true. A lot of it is true. I'm not saying all of it is true. Those are the reapers. Those are the ones that he said that he was going to send those vine dressers. Look at verse 12. Therefore, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will send unto him wondrous, and they shall cause him to wonder, and shall empty his vessels and break their bottles. So a lot of programs being cut out in a lot of states. It's a lot of people that are standing up against this Affordable Care Act. God has it wonderful, and I've had it wonderful in this nation. That's why I fight so hard for this nation. But when it ceased to be a nation named as a nation is today, it's because of the Moabites. It's because of those that are at ease. Things people say, well, here in Louisiana, they ain't doing this. How many of y'all, or how many of these Moabites that are on welfare, food stamps, on governmental programs, living a life of ease, or got a comfortable job, got comfortable jobs, but are not tithing, are not paying offering, not going to church, living whoremongering lives. And man, I wouldn't be in that church. They ain't getting my money and all that. There's a cost for living that way, though. You hadn't suffered. You hadn't been emptied. See, the leaves, you have to refine them. You have to empty them from vessel to vessel. Your life has to be tossed around. If you don't enter into Christ's suffering, he became poor for our sakes. If he give it up, why shouldn't you give it up? If we in the church can live without living that away, your mentality is sex, and that has come into the church. That has crept so deeply in the church, you've corrupted the church. And that's all it is. It's the ran rampant sex. Your daughter's a whoremonger and your son a whoremonger. You mean to tell me somebody's living in your home and they're not married? You mean to tell me somebody is going here and he's not taking care of his children and things? The church is supposed to be the shining light and example. If you don't work, you don't eat. There's no free lunches. You can't stay here without contributing to it.
Amen.
So what happens? These people have been skating along, and God says it's going to come a time when I'm going to send the hard noses in there. I'm going to have to search for them with lights and break them and refine them. He's going to restore the Moabites, but only a remnant of it, because everybody is not the same. All of the Moabites are not just like, it's a remnant that want to work. It's a lot of people out there. They're not on welfare by choice. They're not on social programs by choice. But God had did these things. We can't figure out God, but the church should know God, and those that are out there, they should be like Ruth, willing to take that chance. Ruth didn't know the outcome of what she was going to have. She says, I don't have any sons and daughters, but I love you. I love about what you stand for, your God. Your God will be my God. That's faith. You have to trust God by faith. It wasn't appointed, and she was obedient. She listened at her mother-in-law when she went to reap. And she says, look, you do this and you do that. Boaz is a type of God. When you work and God takes notice of your work, he noticed that. He said, don't go reaping in another field. See, it's a lot of them going, the Moabites like to whore around reaping in everybody's field. They like this man and this woman giving them something, and this person and that person giving them something. They prostitute themselves out for goods. It's going to come a time when God's going to break that. We have to start there. We have to preach abstinence. You consummate the marriage on that wedding night. If you want to find out how to curse them, you sleep with somebody and you ain't married to them. You want to find out how to bring them down. What did Balaam tell Balak? I can't curse who God hadn't cursed. But I tell you what, how you can get them. You cause those good-looking women to go over there and cause them to fornicate. Paul speaks about that. We didn't know how many of them died until Paul. But he killed 23,000 of them that committed fornication in the wilderness because they were not being obedient to God's word and that they played the harlot. And we remember that that was when Phinehas' ministry started, because he went into the Israelite tent and stuck a spear through the Moabitess woman and the Israelite man that were copulating at the time. Because they had went into them and had sexual relations, and God destroyed 23,000 of them. He says, every man lift up his sword against his brother. See, because it's a lot of times your brothers, and they talk about it in Joel and Amos about the Moabites. He says, for transgression, he was going to destroy them. Because sometimes it's your cousins that stab you in the back. It's your relatives and the people that you know the most who won't do anything for you. And we're going to talk about pride, too, because they're proud. That family line had prospered a little bit more than your family line. Y'all cousins and everything, but we don't fool with them because they're lower class. They just as poor as you, but they have a little something, and that material thing makes them think that they're something, that they're different from you. It happens within a family. They could be colorblind. They could be this and that because a person has a little skin color, or have the hair, or have looks, or have something, or a little shape or something, and they think that they're better or more than you. It's a lot of relatives that deal with us with slack hands and everything, and that's your brother, and you don't supposed to be impartial. You're supposed to be, you're not supposed to be partial. You're supposed to be impartial. You hadn't learned the things of God, and you refused to learn. Ophir refused to try. After this Moabite, after this Israelite was dead, she was married to him. It was good enough for a living. But when he died, did you want to take a chance to see where he come from, what God he served? I'm sure he told you about his God, if he was a man. But a lot of men, that's why I'm going to have to get to it in complacent. It's a lot of Christians are not standing up for God. God has to knock them down too. The complacent ones. Because you got you a Moabite woman or a Moabite husband, and you think, man, that's all that in a bag of chips too. You think you got something. And it's something that's going to take you to your grave. If you read about it, when he says Chemosh, they're going to be afraid of Chemosh. Solomon served the god of Chemosh, the Moabite's god. He erected a shrine to Chemosh, because of his harem, the women that he had, he built them all types of temples and shrines to Chemosh. Solomon did this. But God had warned him that these women was going to draw his heart away from God. The Moabite has no inclinations toward God. Only the people in the world, that shows that God's sovereignty, that it's some that he's going to save and some he don't, that still shows you grace and election, that no people tribe will disappear. He's not willing that any should be lost, so God's going to save all men. Haven't you met some people from bad families, and it's a good person in that family, and you love that person or do anything for that person? Like I say, he sometimes saved one of a family. It's rare occasions that he may save the whole family. Some of the reasons he withheld judgment from Solomon and his son was for David's sake. So when God's bringing judgment and he's turning over these leaves where these people have lived in luxury and they kind of work against God because their heart's not with God, we have to work hard. I'm trying to stay away from the Christian's point of view of what we should be doing here until next week where it shows our complacency. I'm trying to show you the Moabite mindset that has entered into the church. You catch it in maybe some political parties, and I don't want to name any parties or whatever, and you catch it in the churches. Mostly it's those of prosperity. It's mostly those who say, I got more blessing, you need to get yours. They always talk about what name brand clothes they buy, what brand car they drive, and their mind is on stuff. They're not seeking the kingdom of God. These Moabites are not, I don't want to confuse them with the parable of the seeds where some were sown on good ground and some were sown on thorny ground and some were sown by the wayside, because this has nothing to do with the word. What we're talking here is the sovereignty of God, that there are people out there that God has to judge, and they may be kin to you, that are wicked and are evil and their hearts are not bent toward God. I want you to read that whole 48th chapter. It's pretty long, and at first glance, I was just going to break it down into one or two things, but I see we have four or five different topics or subjects in there that we need to concentrate on. But we have to realize we can't save every little kitten out there. Are you getting what I'm saying? You can't save everybody. That's God's decision to save those. It says he added to the church as such that should be saved. I was listening at one of the breakaways from Herbert W. Armstrong's Worldwide Church of God. I used to listen to him. I stopped listening because of some of the things he was preaching and teaching. But I used to listen at Born to Win with Ronald Dart. And he was saying one of the keys about helping the poor or helping the sinner was that you don't become one yourself. Jesus helped the sinner. He always was dining, but he didn't become a sinner. You can't, everybody say, loan me a quarter or give me a few dollars or can you do this and I'm a Christian, you're a Christian, won't you? You can't help everybody or pretty soon you'll be broke. You don't have a dollar or nothing because you didn't give away all your blessings. So you have to be a wise steward of God's finances. There are some people you can't help. I don't care if they're your cousin. That could be. Sometimes you have to tell your children no. You have to tell your wife. If I ask my wife if I'm in something and going on and I say I need, she say, well, I ain't got it or whatever. Well, she don't want to do it. Or she don't say she don't have it. I need to leave her alone. Because there's a reason people say no sometimes. You have to learn to say no. Without that, you'll be in bad shape without the ability to say no at some time. You remember Jesus, it seemed like Jesus was making the woman plead for him when she asked for her daughter to be healed. And he said, well, it's not for me to give the children's bread unto the dogs. She retorted back to him. So this shows that she wasn't the average sinner. This woman had faith. This woman believed, and she wasn't resting on her laurels, and that's one that works hard. That's one that's another Ruth. That's one like Lot's daughters. See, a lot of people talk against Lot's daughters, but they did what they thought they had to do to survive. If we would look at God's, a lot of time, and him dealing with women, that women get off with much more than men get off with. If you would look at it in Timothy, he says, the woman shall be saved in childbearing. What did they say? They were trying to preserve the seed line. They say that this is the last man on earth or whatever, and our father's seeds could die. God showed you throughout his book of the law that you would do anything to preserve that seed line, even if your brother had a wife and that wife passed. That was where we get the word onanism from, whereas he was supposed to go in unto Tamar and bring forth seed for his brother, bring forth the heir for his brother. But because of his selfishness, it says he wasted his seed. That's why they came to Jesus and trying to trick him about, well, this woman was married and her husband died or whatever, because a family, a genealogy is key to the Christian life because God says be fruitful and multiply. So when people try to use that old thing about sex in their nature, yeah, God did ordain that, but he put it in an institution. He put it inside marriage. He put it in a proper perspective. See, that's the difference from a Christian and a Moabite, and we should signify those differences because through that complacency, and now you figure the government owe it to you, and we have women out there that's getting welfare, food stamps, and I'm not saying that's the best way to live. I'm not saying that they're living the life of Raleigh. I'm not saying some of them don't need help. But I am saying that they need God above all. And that the only way that they gonna be lifted up out of that conversation is a lot of us have to start towing the line and telling them and making them see that they're going to have to tow the line. There is no other way. You will have to drink the cup. Now you may have to drink the dregs of the cup. And then those of us that are complacent, the reason a lot of Christians die broke, a lot of the Christians fail to achieve their full potential or walk away from blessings that God has given to you, you giving them to Moabites. You complacent in holding God's doctrine firm. You doing this your way, and God didn't tell you how to do it. So the Moabites, Amos was talking about in the book of Amos, the 3rd chapter, in the 12th verse, he's talking about something being torn and something being left. We see where there is accountability to everybody, and even the false prophet is accountable to God for what he preaches and teaches. So don't let no one tell you that since they're not serving God, that they don't have a sense of response. They don't, shouldn't have a sense of morality should be inbred in you, whether you of God or not. Abimelech didn't preach or wasn't under the counsel of God in banner, but we see that God had a certain morality, whereas God was in a, he was in a position where God talked to him and told him what Abraham was doing was not morally correct. And that he was offering his wife unto you. So, do you know any of your relatives or whatever that goes to churches or whatever, or that don't go to churches, that's living an illicit life? Have you pointed out to them that that's not right and you're not going to be a party to that? See, because we have to not be Jonahs. There are a lot of Christians, and like I say, this keeps dipping in into the Christian perspective of complacency. Jonah was being rebellious and not complacent here, but he didn't want to preach to the Ninevites because he figured the Ninevites would get saved or they would live a while, and he knew the prophecy was that the Ninevites was to punish Israel. The prophecy was that it was going to be the Assyrians that sent Israel into captivity that was going to scatter Israel abroad. Is it people we don't preach the gospel to or teach the gospel to because we won't end up popular with them? We feel that they won't get, that they'll get saved. We feel that they may look at us in a derogatory or contemptible way. Do we withhold who we are in God? See, because it goes back to being a witness for God. You remember these people say, when I was reading the 46th chapter of Jeremiah, I said, well, hold that verse about the word is a witness against us. Well, if we're witnesses for God, we have to do as Paul told Timothy, do the work of the evangelist. In other words, we have to proclaim the gospel. That's why he had created us, was for good works, and to be a vine, a transporter, of a light bringer to the world. We can't hide that light. Just because we're amongst a bunch of drunks, a bunch of fornicators, a bunch of people that believe differently from us, we're to stick out. We're to let them know that that's not right. We're God's warning sign. So Moab had been warned, and they knew these things. Your relatives know these things, and you should be preaching and living it and teaching to them. But if you ain't living it, you can't teach it to them. If you celebrate and doing these things with them, they will think of your religion as one of the worst things that they are. And they will try to control you. So what happens in their luxury and ease, they will tell you, well, you don't have to tithe. You don't have to offer. You might need it. You might be in a bind. God understands. Now they're in the position of Eli's sons or some of the other people. They're getting you to touch what's sacred for your ease, for your comfort. You will steal or rob God. As God says, will a man rob God? You're going to hold back on God. So what they're doing, they're they're introducing water into your wine. They're weakening your doctrine, but you're going to have to drink the whole cup of that when it comes back of sowing and reaping that you've helped cheated God. So during your time that you need God, that you were depending on what man says, now God's not going to help you because you had walked contrary to God in every sin and transgression. God has to punish you for not listening at him. He punished Solomon for not listening at him. See, Solomon figured that he could make all these alliances and marry all these women to keep the peace. He wasn't depending on God to keep the peace. We have to depend on God to keep the peace with our relatives, with our family, with the people around us. During times of turmoil and calamity, we'll have that inner peace and that inner joy, but we won't be seeking peace as the world do because they might be at odds with us. They might be, can't stand this and that, but at least you're standing for God. The Moabites are going to try to seduce you. That's why he calls them seducing spirits. In the last days, there'll be plenty of seducing spirits out there. The Moabites are going to try to break you down, and you will see at what ease they're doing. You will see how they're living. You will start worshiping their gods. In other words, you will syncretize your religion, and before you know it, you will be so far away from your God that you can't get back. Elijah, when he came on the scene, it was a kind of instructive time because, as I was saying, when I came to this church years ago, I was feeling a rhema word, different scriptures that God was bringing to me, and I was telling you about in Revelation how I kept feeling him saying, strengthen those things that are about to die. And see, spiritually, a lot of us need Ezekiel preaching. In other words, that bring life to dry bone. That infuse life into us. Elijah came to the point that he was at a time when it would only be maybe 150 years or so before Assyria would scatter Israel. So he had to make the people make a decision, just like John the Baptist was trying to make the people make a decision on choosing God. And Elijah called him up to Mount Carmel, and he says, this day, choose the God that you will serve. Up on Mount Carmel, he was making them make a choice. We have to make a choice, and the time is desperate, and the time is now. If we're not connected to God by his Spirit, born of the Spirit, if we're not studying and reading his word, if we're not praying to God, our walk with God's going to suffer because of the Moabites that they can't curse you, but they can seduce you and cause you to commit spiritual adultery, physical adultery, and idolatry. They're going to enter into your life through, even though you feel you have self, they were proud. And that's one thing about the Moabites. Pride was one of their main problems. And pride makes you a child of the devil. God's children are not children of pride. Proud spirit and a haughty spirit, high-mindedness going before fall. Some living like living higher than they should be. Those are Moabites. So we see where God destroys those that are resting on their leaves. That's why I say, what people do to you and get by, don't let it bother. But God is the judge of the whole earth. Those that take an advantage of you, blessed are you when you're persecuted, when you go through all, because you can rejoice. God's just giving your enemy first chance. You do what God told you to do. But don't be one of the complacent ones that you didn't became one of the ones God's going to punish, and you think you're smarter than God. You think you're smarter than everybody else, and you've been turned over to a reprobate mind because you can't see yourself for what you are.
you hadn't examined yourself to see that you are chief of the sinners. When the scriptures say no liars, but when you lying and deceiving and all you say is a lie, and if it be found out, that's all you do. You sit in church in line. Don't you think the penalty is going to be greater for you than it was those Moabites? So God's going to judge the whole earth. But judgment, that's why we went through Judah first. Judgment starts at the house of God. But if he judged those within, you don't think he's going to judge those outside the church? So that judgment is coming. It's a lot of things in my children, and they're grown now. They're men and women now. But I still come down on them hard a lot of times. I still come down real hard. Because that's things God has to purge out of them. And a lot of times they may come back and they say, this is what divided me and my daddy. This was my mother. Now I see. And see, there are a lot of things that my daddy did wrong, and a lot of situations my daddy left me bad in. So my daddy is not my God. I looked toward my daddy for things and my stepfather for things that they did for me. But I also see their flaws. I see problems that they got me into. I see jams to where they should have stood. And if I see jams and flaws in y'all, and if I don't tell you about it, one day at the judgment, one day when God's bringing this thing on you, why did Pastor Tebbit this? Why did my parents say something to me? So when things happen, I look back and say, well, I was told this. I should have listened. See, sometimes you think that you could outwit God, and the Bible tells you God is not mocked. And there, it's not that you have a reverence for God and that you're teasing or making fun of God. No, it's that word mocked, and that means God is not outwitted. He's not outfoxed. You belong to the wrong church because they told you give to get. In other words, if you tithe, you'll get 100-fold. May not be so. That's not God's promise there to everybody. He may promise it to some. He said he'll take care of you. But did Elijah receive 100-fold? Or did Elijah didn't know where his bread was coming from the day to day, and the brook dried up on him? And a widow woman had to feed Elijah. Elijah was on the run for his life. Was he blessed that way? See, you may have to suffer to enter in. Jesus was buried in a borrowed tomb. Jesus lived as an itinerant preacher. He went around. He had to ask and look to God for his food. God so abundantly blessed him that he fed the multitudes of 20 and 30 thousands of people. But when people teach you a prosperity gospel and everything, you should see, now, if this is the will of God for my life, look at your life now and see, are you prospering in the Lord? See, because it's going to be times that you run and not faint and walk not beauty. See, to get closer to God, it's not anything special. He says, come and buy without money. It's not nothing you have to go and buy. It's a change of life. It's the way you live your life. The Moabites want to consume for their own lust. It's not stopping at every Jack in the Box, every Burger King, or the chicken places. It's sometimes just to go home and eat with my wife and eat a salad. Eat differently. It's live differently. And, oh man, I got to have this. Your mind telling you that. But if you wean yourself off sugar, you don't really have to have sugar. They didn't do it in the old days. I say you don't have to have all those because there's a lot of spices that takes the place that they use for salt that taste the same as salt. They do the same thing as salt. Your mind has a trick. It's psychological. It's just like illness is psychologically. That's why Adam, when they said you shall die in this day, that he lost the spiritual link with God that day. You need the spirit to give you life. That's why I say you need Ezekiel's preaching that speaks life into the dry bone. The spirit when the spirit left him, he lost communication with God. David said, my spirit was dried up in me. Said, Lord, please don't take your spirit away from me. This whole year after my sin and living with Bathsheba, Lord, don't take your spirit away because I wasn't the same. It's not the same. Without the spirit, you don't have anything to drive the body. You don't have anything to live for. You're just living under the sun. There's no hope. There's nothing to be restored. You just go to the grave and die. But with the spirit, you're looking for eternal life. That's obedience. A Moabite don't know that because they live for the flesh. They live to please the self. They like to lay on decisions. They say, we're rich and we have need of nothing. But they don't know that they're poor, blind, wretched, and naked. They're looking at life from a different perspective than you are. And they think they have to live and not suffer. But we have to suffer to the end. If Christ suffered to the end, we will have to pick up our cross and follow after him. Pick up the cross and deny self. More by living is living for self. We have to live for Christ. And that means you have to suffer as he suffered. Heavenly Father, as we come before you today.